This storm has caused confusion and delay.
You have caused
confusion and delay.
That is the pure face prejudice.
Daisy is just the ultimate thought. Daisy is just the ultimate thought.
Your impatience has caused confusion and delay. This storm has caused confusion and delay. You are causing confusion and delay. You cause confusion and
6 years old and you can't even drive? I can. Are you stupid, eh? Are you a stupid fool? Well, why can't you drive then? You can't even drive. Been great today.
Well, hello everyone. I'm here. Welcome to the Deepest Lore. Now, when I say cozy, I really have. I've got a mug, and I'm cupping it in my hands, keeping warm. I'm wearing a little hoodie. I've even got my hood up. And that is because a storm is coming. I actually got the lodge is in a kind of park thing here. Oh, the actual, it's Clipper Organic is the tea. And the manager of the site sent a warning saying, there's a storm coming. Be careful, everybody. If you've got any, if you've got like a kind of a clothesline up, you might want to think about taking it down. And then I got another email from my car insurance company, Admiral, who said, oh, be careful driving, a storm is coming. I was like, oh, this is exciting, isn't it? There's a storm brewing, you know? It's kind of, the lodge is made out of wood, and it's got like, it's a wooden lodge. So when a rain really starts to fall, you can hear it like pattering on the roof, and it really is quite kind of cool, especially when the wind is going. You're like, oh, you know, am I going to survive? Is it going to blow away? And there's something cozy about that, you know, something cozy about being in something like the lodge when it's when there's a storm or brewing. You know, I've always kind of liked that. I'm much more of a, I've always hated the summer. And I like the other 3 months, the other three seasons. I like the spring when it's kind of, the sun is coming up and, the last of the snow, like the kind of frosty March where the daffodils are coming up, February is receding and you get the kind of first glistenings of spring and, you get the flowers of the spring coming. I've always loved that period. And I've also always loved the turning of the summer into the kind of golden autumn where the leaves start to fall. But I've also always loved a very rainy day where you're kind of stuck inside and you have to be cozy. The only season I hate is summer. I'm a true child of winter, friends. I don't like summer. Summer is oppressive. Summer is hot. There's a kind of nagging, oppressive voice telling you that you should be out, you know. I don't like to be out. I like to be in. I like to be in. I kind of like being home. I don't like being out. I resent being out. Being out drains me of my energy. I've never been outdoorsy in that sense. And it's kind of been a bit weird these past few weeks because I've been, glued to war coverage. I did that special stream on Monday. And since I've done that, it's kind of cleared the decks a little bit. I've been less kind of obsessed with it this past couple of days. I've, been trying to do other things. I had a bit of a cleanup and, I'll be seeing AAA tomorrow and all weekend like I do every week. When you get into these, this is something that people don't talk about enough, I don't think. When you get into these zones where you're kind of constantly following something like the current conflict, you kind of start to like get weird thoughts. I don't know if you've ever had this. Tell me if you relate to this or not. You start thinking like, am I a real person? Do I actually exist in the world? Have I just disappeared? Have you ever seen that film, Lawnmower Man, where he kind of disappears into the matrix, into the mainframe of the interwebs or whatever? And sometimes I think, like, do I actually exist anymore? Or am I just a kind of creature of the internet who just lives? Like, am I just an online man who lives his entire life vicariously through events that are happening thousands of miles away that I have no control over? And I think that's probably not healthy to have that. But other times I think I kind of love it. And I'm kind of, you know, pushed and pulled between those two feelings quite a lot. But then, of course, I spend the rest of the week doing, you know, stuff with the family. Like, I went to one of these kind of child's, a four-year-old's party. It was a joint four-year-old Halloween party where I had to, like, make chat with the other parents and kind of pretend to be happy and things. And while I was there, all I could think about was, wish I was back alone watching current conflict stuff and shit posting on Twitter. That's not good, is it? Maybe I should have been more in the moment. Sometimes I struggle. Just being honest with you, sometimes I struggle to be more present and to be more in the moment because my mind is somewhere else. And I wonder how many of you struggle with those same feelings. How many of you struggle with those same push and pull feelings? When you go and touch grass, somebody will say, but then you do. You know, I take AAA out 3-4 times a week sometimes. And we go to like country parks and, you know, there's an awesome garden center near here called RHS Wisley, where you really do get to see the changing of the seasons. There's a brilliant pumpkin display there at the moment. So I, like, you know, physically I'm out touching grass quite a lot. But even when I'm out touching grass, whether I've got my phone on me or not, my mind is elsewhere. I'm often reminded of a passage in Paradise Lost by John Milton. You know, the mind is its own place. There, it's can make itself a heaven or a hell, says Satan. But then I'm reminded of Christopher Marlowe's Dr. Faustus, where Mephistopheles, you know, the guy who is sent by Lucifer to sign the contract with Faustus, is constantly on hand, basically telling Faustus, like, listen, mate, hell is not as all it's cracked up to be. You know, I am here physically, but hell is not a place. It's a state of mind. And I'm constantly tormented wherever I go. And sometimes in my darker moments, I think, am I already there? Am I already Mephistopheles, trapped with the kind of pain of the world wherever you go? Why can't you let it go and enjoy the pretty flower that you're looking at with your four-year-old or three-year-old daughter? Can you let it go? Think about the flower and nothing else. And I struggle to do that, and I always have done. So, anyway, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It's going to be cozy. It's going to be more cozy. It's going to be more cozy. I just thought I'd start with a dark, existential, nihilistic meditation on the state of living in post-modernity in the perpetually online present. Before we get going, I will remind people to buy my courses, of course, pick up Foundations of Logic and all of my other courses. Which ad shall I play? which ad shall I play? Why don't we go with let's go with Logic. Come on.
Now available at the Academic Agency. Sharpen your analytical mind and your argumentation skills with Foundations of Logic. The course draws on the ancient wisdom of traditional logic that students learned for over 2,000 years, from the time of Aristotle through to the medieval schoolmen, right down to the 20th century. Sign up now for a free preview lecture.
Be sure to like this video and subscribe. And if you really like my content, maybe consider joining the channel or donating or maybe even buy a mug. I am grateful for all of your support. Now get out.
Oh, I forgot that was I used to insert that at the end of videos and things like that. That's what it was made for. All right, so how are we going to do this Q&A stream? Well, there are people in the chat. I can see the chat. There are people who are watching on Twitter. And you know, obviously super chats will be prioritized, but I don't really care about you know, you can ask questions in the comments and post on Twitter, and I'll try to get around to them as well. Let's try to blast through as many as I can. Entropy has already got a few super chats in there. Jay asked, this has probably already been asked, but are you joining Carl and getting in with the Tories? Well, I mean, the response I'll give to that is what I told Carl when I saw him at the traditional British group, Britain group. What difference does it make? Sure, do it. Why not? I'll join the Tories. I mean, as opposed to not, I mean, it'll make no difference whatsoever anyway. So, yeah, why not? Why not? Just do it. Coney says, one, what would you say to your 2019 self other than prep for the pandemic? Nothing really. I mean, I think 2019 self is not a million miles away from current self. Only a bit younger, I suppose. I mean, I was still on my old job back then. But I mean, to be honest, I was really fed up. It was really starting to be a bit of a nuisance having to, you know, do work and stuff. Well, do, you know, my old job. So yeah, you know, what else would I say to him? Maybe I would have made preparations and like just left the country. But that would have been difficult because I think Mrs. A was pregnant in 2019. So yeah, I wouldn't say much to him. I'd probably give him advice about because in 2019 when Mrs. A was pregnant, I was reading books about you know, like parenthood and stuff. And basically what I tell him is just chuck them all out. They're useless. You just learn on the job, and there's no preparing you for anything, basically. And even now, you know, you're just constantly on a learning curve when it comes to having a child, basically. So I'd probably talk to him about that sort of stuff, really. Sordabji lol says, have you tried getting Constantine Alamariou on to talk about his book? He also does food blogging, so maybe you can discuss flat whites, your CS with your cigar stream with BAP. That's Bronze Age Pervert, is one of your all-time best streams. No, I haven't asked him. I mean, I am in contact with him on a fairly regular basis, although BAP is a weird person to DM with because he'll send you like 15 messages in a row, and then, you know, you see them a few hours later and you respond, and then he doesn't respond for like 6 days, and then he'll respond as if he's just responded, So he's a very strange person to DM with. Although he's also quite a funny person to DM with, because he DMs like he talks on his shows and so on. So he's an unusual character. But no, I haven't asked him. I mean, to be honest, I've been kind of in a funny place this past month or so, where really since the conflict started, I've lost a lot of my motivation to do anything. And I think that, you know, when I'm in a bit of a down period, when I'm in a bit of a period where I lose my motivation, I have always just had faith that it'll come back at some point. Some days I think maybe it will never happen, but it always does. So I've just kind of learned over time. I think one of the journeys of self-discovery you have as you grow older, as you get to know yourself a bit better, you start to know, like, almost like see yourself from the outside, kind of come to understand yourself almost like a kind of RPG character with a set of set traits, you know. And one of the things I've learned is that if I'm not feeling it, I can't force it. Like today, for example, I'm doing this Q&A stream because I didn't really have a good idea about what I wanted to do for Deepest Lore. Couldn't be bothered to ask any guests. Didn't want to get anything together. And thought, like, well, if that's how I'm feeling, maybe it's better to do a stream like this, where I just talk about anything, than force it. And I found that best. If it comes, it comes. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. Now, I don't know if that's good advice, because that you may not be like that. Some people are very good at having like a daily grind. They can keep, like I mentioned before, I had a colleague who was a novelist who literally 9 started writing, 5 stopped writing, treated it like a 9 to 5. I can't do that. When I'm in a kind of mode like this where I just kind of don't want to do anything, I can't do it. I can't force it. And even back when I was working, like back in the city, when I had my old job, I worked as a producer of events and things like that for financial. Like, I got to know investment bankers and financial engineers and people like that back in those days. Even back then, I'd go like 3 weeks without doing anything. Like, I'd be in work at my desk, but I'd just be shitposting, and I wouldn't do anything. And my manager would be like, what the fuck are you doing? I was like, yeah, don't worry, I'll come. But I've always just been able to pull out the bag when I need to. Even in a situation like that, events where there's deadlines and there's other people and there's, you know, I just have got a way of pulling things together when I need to. That's what do you call it? Mercurial. That would be the trait, right? Mercurial. Maybe if I was in a different mood, I'd ask him, but I feel disinclined to at the minute. Coney says, thoughts on the creation of a small circulation print magazine of dissident writer articles from disparate authors instead of several Substack sticks. They're bundled together into a mighty a mighty faggot. And he doesn't mean that in the slur sense. He means into sticks, basically. Well, Coney, I believe that has already been done in several ways. There's one called Praxology, which is an aggregation service, which if Jay Greenriver is watching this, he's put one of the things that he does. Somebody can link it in the thing. So, and I know my articles get aggregated into that Yeah. And there's also a print. There is a print magazine. There's the one that Bap and Rural, the Man's World, or whatever it's called. But there's also another one who asked me to do. It's called Asylum Magazine. Asylum Magazine. It's asylummagazine.ca. They do that where they have multiple well-known DR people writing for them. So, yeah, it exists already. So, yeah, get on. I mean, I wouldn't reinvent the wheel if it already exists. I try to get involved with whatever it is already there. Coney says, who is your favorite super chatter? Well, you're always in there first, Coney. So I at least recognize your name, which is a good start. I mean, I'm trying to think now. Who's my favorite super chatter? It's really the ones who stand out. It's the ones that I can, whose names I can remember. Big Nig, obviously. Years is a pretty decent super chatter. There's a guy called Devastator who went through a period of giving out like 100 channel memberships, which was pretty cool when he was doing that. So him, I remember him. There's the one who changes his name every week. D's, whatever. So those would be some of them. I like some of the really old school names, like my when I very first started taking Patreons and things like that. There was a set like the Ambivalent Onion, Edward Darra. You know, do you remember those guys? Some of them are still around. Tragic Vision, I still see him around occasionally. So you know, some of the old school OG guys as well. Trouble is, right, when you're me, it's going to sound weird, I literally see hundreds, if not thousands, of comments and stuff. And people remember this when there was the Deep Lore Discord, back in the old Discord days, before it went over to the Matrix, which it is now. People will remember back then that I really struggled to distinguish between, like, it takes me a long time to figure out, like, oh, actually, those are three different people, or they're four distinct guys, not like, because I think the human mind can only process so many different individuals. I mean, was it Dunbar's number or something? So I think you can literally only process about 150 things. So that there's just too many names and avatars, and it's very difficult then to, and like, unless you've start, and even sometimes they've been on the show and somebody will be like, oh, I came on the show once, so I can't. It's just too hard to process all of that. Although I do have the spreadsheet, which helps with the guests and things like that. But there's even some guests, I look on the spreadsheet, I was like, who was that again? I can't remember. So, yeah. So it's, yeah, there's a kind of working memory thing. There's also people like in the live chat and so on who always stick out in the mind, you know. Obviously the late someone in the chat, you know, Lundberg, Lady of Shalott, ever present. Back in the day there was Saffron. I mean, I can remember people, but you know, I need my memory jogging sometimes. Mossad, of course. I mean, he's always around being a pest. People ask me, like, why don't I ban him? The thing is that I don't know. Like, I just feel like he's okay. He's a nationalist, but he's a nationalist for his own people, right? And I do, like, he does wind everybody up, though. I do get why people don't like him. But Takar says, asking based on the recent Newsom-Xi meeting, what would Chinese rulership over European origin peoples look like? Hard to know. Never happened before, to my knowledge. So it's hard to know what they'd be like. Because the Chinese historically have kind of kept themselves to themselves, haven't they? I do know that they, and I learned this through Thomas Sowell back in the day, like the you-know-whos, have a history of being not well-liked when they go to other countries, being kicked out. They were famously kicked out of America back when they had that anti-Chinese act in the 1890s. You remember when they had them over to work on the railroads in California? They were kicked out then. There's been several Southeast Asian nations that they've been kicked out of because the Chinese abroad end up becoming what they call a middleman minority. And they tend to end up like dominating certain sectors, which earns them resentment. So I don't know, though, because there's the other side of the Chinese where they basically keep themselves to themselves and they don't mix and they kind of. And I remember there were loads of Chinese in the university. There was this meeting that I had to go to, series of meetings, about how are we going to get the Chinese students to integrate more into the rest of the class, because they don't mix. They just make friends with each other, don't talk to anyone. So they had all of these guys, like psychology guys and stuff, and they were like, oh, well, we've tried running different experiments. And one of the experiments they tried to run was, rather than allowing people to sit where they wanted to sit in the classroom, pre-selecting what the tables would be, okay? So deliberately putting each table with one Chinese kid on it and then, you know, all of the other students. And they ran this experiment for like a whole year with a few particular classes. And they were like, this experiment didn't work, because what happened was at the end of the term, the Chinese students who were put on the tables on their own simply just didn't have any friends. So all they succeeded in doing was making a bunch of really lonely, friendless Chinese students. So they're like, oh, this is even worse, because now they don't have any friends at all, because we've stopped them making friends with each other, and they didn't make friends with the people on the at the table. They just kept themselves to themselves. These set of workshops went to was like brainstorming and trying to come up with ideas of how you get them to mix. And in the end, I think they ended up saying, like, we kind of give up work. We don't know what to do because they're not mixing. Because they basically ended that experiment because they were like, well, better them make some friends than not, you know, be totally isolated, basically. So, yeah, that was interesting. I've never forgotten that either. So I don't know. I mean, my sense is that they may be just kind of absentee landlords in a way. I feel like they're not. I feel like, my dad told me that when they closed down the Ford factory that he'd worked at for 30 odd years, you know, many, many years, he worked for a Ford factory in South Wales. He was there like overseeing the shutdown and the close off and all that. And he said, basically what Ford had done is they'd sold all of the old parts rather than scrapping them or shipping them back to America or whatever. They'd sold them to some Chinese company. And he said the Chinese, they brought their entire workforce, the entire crew. He said they didn't say hello to anyone. They didn't mix with any of the boys. They didn't talk to him or anyone. They basically brought like a shipping container. They lived in the shipping container while they were kind of there, like, closing everything down, packed it all up in a few days, and then left. Entirely self-contained project, which involved nobody else. So I get the impression that the Chinese are kind of very both exclusionary and like xenophobic in the old fashioned sense, where they just don't want to go outside their Great Wall. And this is a kind of I remember reading a book years ago by David Land, where he was challenging the thesis of Jared Taylor. He was challenging the thesis of Jared Diamond. You remember that book, Gems, Guns and Steel, where, you know, why are some countries rich and some countries poor? Jared Diamond was like, well, it's because of geography. And if you read that, like, the whole book is like, well, it's because of the geography. And a lot of people said, well, that's kind of bullshit, Jared Diamond, because China has got everything, absolutely everything. And yet it's, you know, they still suffered in what was known as the Great Divergence, you know, this massive pulling away of Europe from the rest of humanity that happened in about 1800 or so. And David Lands, in his kind of counter to Diamond, said, actually, no, geography is a factor, but the main thing is culture. So he was arguing that it comes down to culture rather than the geography. And he has this whole chapter on China and why China kind of fell away and why their natural advantages, you know, didn't persist into modernity up until very recently. And I mean, Diamond's arguments are awful. It's just like, oh, you have to study the shape of the coastline. China's got a kind of jagged coastline and it's not good for trade. It's just like, come on, dude. You know, they're just the worst arguments ever from Diamond. And Lands was like, well, yeah, basically they were so isolationist that they didn't accept any ideas from elsewhere. Their trade and their technology and their innovation all stagnated because they were too xenophobic. That was David Land's argument, okay? And kind of interesting. It's kind of interesting. You know, there must be some truth to that because it is part of their character. Of course, nowadays, and what they've done since, you know, since the kind of Kissinger-Nixon meeting with Mao back in the early 70s is they've just stolen the technology. They've just stolen tech. That's what the Chinese have done. You know, they're not great innovators, but they're great copycats. And that was another problem that every university was facing. Oh, the Chinese students are just cheating. Like literally just handing in the same essay or just like openly cheating in their exams and things like that. Copying each other's work or, you know, oh, getting like kind of expert generated essays from online and turning them in. Like, they're massive cheats, right? They're copycat and they're cheats. You know, basically China has done a lot of that, kind of stolen tech or managed to get like stupid Western companies to invest all their money over there to build up their infrastructure. You know, loads of stuff like that. So yeah, they've managed to kind of reap the benefit. I mean, if it was in civilization, do you remember in civilization you could do like tech trading, or you could like send a spy in to steal the tech of the other civs? Essentially, what China have done is that there's a lot of that. They've done a lot of tech steal while remaining fairly isolationist in a lot of their thinking and culture and so on and so forth. Takar says, I think much of the middle class may not be essential for maximizing a country's sovereignty. I say this based on Iran and Turkey's resistance to brain drain and the relatively undisrupted life with COVID restrictions in the West. What do you think? I think that, I mean, when I think of my own dad, he's a natural traveler and somebody who is never going to stay his whole life in Iran. It's just not his character. He's kind of, I was saying this on Twitter. He's the kind of guy who, if you're out in a foreign country and that you're in a bar or something, you'll start like striking up chats with the locals or the guy behind the bar, or like, you know, he'll have a crowd, like he'll just be talking to, and he can go anywhere in the world and do that, which is a very particular kind of mode. But it also, I think, comes with other things, like a certain cosmopolitanism and a certain kind of acceptance of, you know, like for example, the typical Iranian is very conservative with what food they'll have, right? They won't try, like, if it's not like normal, if it's not like, you know, their usual rice and bread and stews or whatever, or, you know, if it's not their usual stuff, they won't try it. And I remember going over there and, you know, my mother was like, oh, well, do you fancy having an Indian tonight or something? Or should we go, you know, they were like, oh, no, we're not touching that filth, you know, not, you know, too spicy or whatever. So they're very resistant to actually like trying. They're kind of, you know, again, a bit insular, a bit kind of, no, I'm just going to have my own type thing. Whereas someone like my dad, he wants to try everything. He wants to try all the cuisines of the world, right? Which is very cosmopolitan, right? And I think there's a natural extent to which the middle classes and middle class types are, you know, they're the anywhere people. They're kind of like, it's not that they entirely lack a sense of their home or whatever, but they're kind of willing to try things, or they want to meet, they want to go places. They want to, you know, they want to be cosmopolitan. And so when it's, I guess what I'm saying is, when your country is led by the middle, the people in the middle there, exactly like the, you know, using my dad as an example, you're naturally then going to get a more cosmopolitan, open, accepting culture based on, you know, trade and trying new things. And, oh, you know, yeah, there's this restaurant and that restaurant. And, you know, it's kind of like, you know, it's just more open. And obviously sovereignty and the notion of places like staying themselves clashes with that, which is why in almost every country, like it, like in Iran, for example, the high-low middle mechanism, right? The middle class is basically like hollowed out, or they've left, or they've moved to Canada and California, and, you know, they're all over Europe. You know, they've basically left. Most of the Iranians who leave aren't refugees. They're economic migrants, you know, in the main, although in recent years that's been changing. But, you know, they tend to be like educated people who leave for political reasons, you know, or they're sick of the conservatives stifling, kind of stifling them at home, or they're pissed off that, you know, they're not getting promoted at work because they're not, you know, they're not religious enough, they're not holy enough or whatever. I mean, I remember when my dad was working for Iran Shipping, for example, there was this story about like they'd all gone out drinking. Like, and my dad has always loved to drink, and, you know, in his younger days he liked women and so on and so forth. But of course, you know, you're being run by an Islamic republic. So essentially, like, some, like, you know, some like superior officer there was like basically dobbed him in, basically like stitched on him, you know, and got him into trouble because it's like, oh, right, you've been drinking and you're out with women or whatever. And they got him in trouble, you know, and it's just stuff like that where he was just going to be like, well, fuck this. I don't want to, he didn't want to deal with that. He actually wanted to live in a more liberal place, you know, and invariably someone who's like that and who resents being told what to do and whatnot is going to end up seeking a more kind of liberal society. It's inevitable. So I think you're basically right. I think if your aim is to keep your nation and kind of true to its traditions, actually the middle class are a pain in the ass. They're a pain in the ass. You know, I'm not saying my dad is a pain in the ass. I'm saying if that is what your aim is, you know, someone like him or most people of his sort are not going to mesh well in that sort of society. But of course, we know where liberalism leads, so it's kind of catch 22 in a way. It's like, how do you find the balance between the culture not being so stifling that it kind of presses down people who are kind of, okay, they may be talented or clever, but they also are kind of open in the way, you know, in the way I'm describing. How do you balance that with maintaining tradition and maintaining sovereignty and so on? And I think that is a question that humanity is yet to find a decent answer to. Maybe Japan has come the closest to answering that question. Carl Habermas says, when you started talking about networks of tens, organizations forming, would you say it's been on the track you wanted? Or do you have reservations with how they're developing? Witan, Beowulf, Old Glory Club, etc. No, I think it's been going great. I think it's developed naturally and organically. The events have increased in quality every year. Last one I went to was superb, done by the Shieldings boys. It's good. It's very good that it all happened. I realize people may sometimes think that I'm a bit distant from things and that I'm not very involved. But as I've always said, I'm just a scholar. It's not my, you know, the organization stuff is not my skill set, really. I help out where I can. I try to give people publicity where I can, type thing. But ultimately, you know, the extent to which I can make those things happen is myself is limited, other than turning up to speak once in a while, you know. I mean, it's all going great, I think. All of those things are very encouraging. And, you know, there's lots of people who've made friends. There's even some people who've got married through it all, you know, so can only be a good thing, right? Slingsby said, have you heard of William Sanderson? He formed the English Ministry in the 1930s. I found a copy of his book, Statecraft. It is very based. I thought it may link well with your recent Cigar Stream book reviews. I'll check that out, Slingsby. It sounds good. Sounds good. William Sanderson, Statecraft. I'll definitely check that out. Sounds interesting. So I'll carry on. I'm still thinking about the middle class question because it's a very good one. Because the thing is that the middle class do end up actually providing a lot to countries. You know, it's the tax base most of the time. You know, a lot of good ideas come from the middle classes and so on. But in every country, they have this tendency, this kind of liberalizing tendency. And it's like, how do you find a way where you can maintain a country without kind of just crushing the middle class? And unfortunately, I think what the Iranians have done is they've really destroyed their middle class. There's almost like no, that either the middle class who were there are resentful and want to leave, or they've already left. So as well as they've kind of managed, you know, developing their tech and manufacturing and so on. I mean, there's no doubt that the country is nerfed a little bit compared to where it would be if they had all of their diaspora, right? And the diaspora, if there was a let's pretend there was a revolution and the country was run, you know, more like a kind of normal, quote unquote, liberal democracy, all those people would go back home. Pretty much I reckon like 80% of them would go back home. And I'm pretty sure my dad could be coaxed out of retirement and help out as well. I'm pretty sure he would go back. So, you know, it's like, it's kind of swings and roundabouts though, because it's not rocking and rolling, it's nerfed. But then you could say, well, if it was rocking and rolling, then you would get all the other problems that come with prosperity. So it's kind of like, it's very hard. There's no solutions, only trade-offs, somebody said, right? But it's like, I mean, honestly, would you like to live there? Because I'm not sure I would. It's like, I mean, I've got a cousin who couldn't wait to get from there. She's currently studying. And, you talk to them and it's just like, all right, well, 24 years old. If I try to hold the hand of a boy in the street, you've got like some revolutionary guard telling you can't hold hands. Or like, oh, why are you looking at him that way? Oh, why didn't you have your sleeve? Why didn't you have your sleeves done up? And it's just like, I mean, I can understand why people like that gets people's backs up, and you wouldn't want to have that level of interference in your everyday life. Or now I can't go for a drink with this, like it's just too, it's oppressive. People don't like it, And my dad, whenever he goes over there, I think he deliberately tries to wind them up. I remember over there, you're not meant to wear, the women are meant to wear the hijab and so on, but the men are meant to wear full trousers. You're not meant to wear shorts, and you're not meant to show your arms or below your legs. Well, my dad, when he goes over there, he'll walk around without his top on in a pair of shorts. He'd be like, "Oh, I'm hot," And obviously, he's going to get stopped. I'm of the mind, I'll be like, "What are you doing? Why would you do that? You're obviously going to wind them up." But he's just like, "I don't want to. Like, why should they tell me what to do?" So it's kind of like, I don't know. I get it. I understand why that would be annoying. And the thing is, it's easy to say when you've lived your whole life in liberalism, "Oh, I'd be all right with that. Oh, that sounds base. That sounds cool." But I'm pretty sure if you lived your entire life like that, you'd have different ideas. So it's kind of different, It's like, because still, basically, you've got a little moral busybody telling you what to do. It's just not a wokester. It's someone who says he's following the code of Islam or something, So I reckon almost nobody watching this would be able to put up with it, to be honest. So, Coney says, "Do you see a DR political hipster scene forming in London, like what's happening in Dime Square in New York?" Yeah, I do. I do see it forming. It probably already is forming. I probably won't be part of it. And I've never had that kind of like Bap and Yavin and these guys. They kind of love it all. I don't, as anybody who's met me will know. So, I mean, yeah, I'm sure it will happen, but whether that includes me or not, I don't know. 5, favorite kind of wine. Well, I'm a red wine guy. I don't like white wine. I always think the white wine tastes like horse's pizzle. I've never liked it. It all tastes the bloody same to me, white wine. You can get some which are more dry and some more sweet, but I've never liked white wine. Red wine, punchy Rioja or something like that. I don't like them too heavy. I like, kind of medium red. Six, did you see the COVID inquiry footage of Dominic Cummings? No, that's on my to-do list, and I'll probably do that later on. I'll probably do that later on. Let's carry on. Takar says, it seems like Russians and Chinese would pretend to ally with techno-globalists while breaking the rules internally and faking data for auditors. Has the Dark Lord or have other globalists addressed this concern? Dark Lord has always been very respectful of China, notably. I mean, I've half wondered whether the Chinese are behind woke itself, you know, because they're very in with the California Democrats, and the California Democrats are the most crazy wokesters. So I wonder if you remember the old Yuri Bezmenov, Moscow subversion tactics. I mean, Putin is in regular contact with Xi. I mean, who knows? Maybe Putin and Xi use woke as a weapon against the West, and there's still kind of foreign networks involved. Although I don't want to get too Alex Jones, but I'm sure. I mean, if you were an enemy of the West, of course you'd promote woke. Of course you would. And Putin knows it's a weakness, which is why he always picks on it. So there we go. Takar says, do you celebrate Nowruz? Well, obviously my dad's family does. And, you know, I'll send him a text or whatever to say happy Nowruz. That's kind of like their Christmas, basically, over there. That's the kind of Iranian New Year. It happens on the equinox, on the spring equinox, March 21st, usually. Or thereabouts, the date changes. Yeah, they do. It's their big celebration. Let's have a look. There are some more super chats here. Black Anis says, being Welsh, do you have any affinity for rugby? No, I'm afraid I don't, Black Anis. And that is because in my school, they pushed rugby so hard that it was almost like playing football was a treat or something that you could get away with, like something you do when the teachers weren't looking or whatever. So there's a kind of natural rebellion that happens. And they really put, like, we had two PE teachers who were rugby guys, right? And they were just rugby all the time. And, you know, you could just tell they were only interested in like what the rugby team were up to and so on and so forth. So I kind of rebelled, and I played football. I played football more than I played. I mean, I did play rugby occasionally. I was a prop when I was younger, believe it or not. And in fact, I wasn't chunky like I am now. I was actually quite skinny. But for some reason, they played me prop when I was I was quite tall when I was 11, around that sort of age. I kind of grew young and then just never grew again. I've been the same height since I was 11 till now. So I started out playing prop, and then I don't know why, though, because the scrum would generally just kind of collapse on my side, because I wasn't very good as a prop. And later on, I was moved out to the wing. I played as a winger. And I didn't play that many games, though. And of the games I did play, I actually was sent off. I was sent off in my last rugby game, which was bad. I was good. I mean, the only thing I was really good at in rugby was mauling. I was quite strong, so I could kind of, you know, when you kind of maul, I could do that quite well. But there were other times where, you know, we'd be playing games or whatever, and we'd get to the end of the session and the PE teachers would be like, you know, I'd finished the session and I was completely clean. I didn't have any mud on me because I'd just been like out on the wing and the action had just never come to my, you know, no action came to my side basically for the entire game. They'd be like, what are you doing? And I remember there was a couple of occasions where they, at the end of the session, they were like, right, get in then. And I was, they dragged me through the mud to make sure that I had mud all over me before I got in, which was a massive pain in the ass because I was hoping to avoid having a shower. And obviously then, you know, like if it's a school day, if you have games in the morning, right, you either have to have a shower or you can do that thing where you put your trousers back over and you've got all the mud down your legs. So, yeah, it was a massive pain in the ass. So that happened. I heard what I was saying was I was moved over I was moved over to the wing after the, by the age of 12 or something like that. I was a winger after that. So yeah, a winger who saw like no action at all, basically. But yeah, I was much more into football, and I played, I was a defender. I played center back. And then similarly, when I got a bit older and didn't grow, you know, I'm 5'8" and, you know, really you have to be a 6-footer to play center back, or you have to be quite tall to play center back. So I was moved over to right back. I played right back most of the time. And usually my job in most games would be to man mark someone, you know. And I can still remember, I mean, it doesn't matter how many games you play, really. I always got really nervous before a game, like butterflies and stuff. And, you know, I always remember we'd be playing like other places, and they were just fucking rough, you know. Like Pontypridd and Coity and all them, they were just rough. You know, so we turn up and we were playing like kids from like council estates and stuff. And the whole game, like in the first minute, you know, somebody would just like try to nut you or, you know, tug on your shirt or whatever. And it was just like a game of like a psycho all game. Me, you know, but I, you know, so that was typically what I'd spend most of my games doing, was having a kind of mental game of attrition with whoever I was set to mark, you know. But I was a rough player, though. Rough. I'd slide in, you know, pick up a lot of yellow cards. Yeah, that's basically the sort of player I was, essentially. I was a decent tackle, reasonably quick when I was younger. But yeah. Okay. Yeah, I was actually better as a centre back than I was as a right back, though, because I had basically very little contribution to the forward motion. You know, the forward. I was a very defensive fullback, if that makes any sense. I was not Cafu. I'll put it that way. all right. Yeah, but the only times I only had man of the match once, and I was playing centre back in that game. GL146 says, I mean, the thing is, you'd spend the whole game as well worrying about keeping the offside line. Do you remember, like, you have to keep, you know, keep the formation in the offside line, and. So there was a lot of that sort of stuff. And, you know, I don't know. I still feel nerves. I was always, I don't know, I always gave me butterflies. Anyway, GL1416 says, do you have tips for reading both kind of mainstream authors and also red pill books? For example, Fukuyama and Burnham, since you also read them. Not really. I mean, I find a lot of the stuff I read back in the day is just kind of liberal trash, a lot of it. I know some people say Fukuyama is worth reading, but honestly, he's not. It's just rubbish. Cryomancer Lex says, is it possible to try to explain in the biospirit and language of Evola in a way that a modern materialist can resonate with? Peterson tried it with Christianity, and it reached a lot of average Joes that way. No, I don't think there is. I think that to truly understand what Evola is saying, you have to kind of leave behind modern materialist assumptions. So I don't think you can. I think somebody will only get Evola when they're ready to. Lukey World says, hi, AA. I've been brainstorming a game idea. If you were to run a 15-minute city, how would you make citizens' lives worse? Think petty and oppressive. It's not a bad idea. Not a bad idea at all. you know... Turn one, appoint the Welsh Assembly to run the city. What's that guy's name, Mark? I would say whoever runs the Welsh Assembly is probably the worst of all characters. Froggy says, "What is your Froggy, actual Froggy, back? Where have you been, Froggy? Long time no see, mate." He says, "Which UO era and series was your favourite?" Let me have a look. Well, let me pull up the playlist. Let me pull up the playlist of UO to have a look at the different eras to jog my memory a little bit. As unpopular opinions, okay. So, I mean, I've got a fondness for, if you have a look on the playlist, there was a period around season two or season three, like around the time of season two, that was kind of a fun little period there. It's got 5 or 6 years ago now. That was back in the British days. I would say, looking through now, I think just having a look. Maybe around the time of season seven, whenever that was another 2 years. So, you know, in the D era, there was a period around season seven that was kind of quite fun as well. However, in terms of like quality, probably the less fun seasons have been more memorable. I mean, this season just gone as, you know, the one just finishing now. Season 12 has been fucking depressing. Probably like the era of absolute. This is the era of absolute kind of like black pill depression, I would say. Copium Den era was pretty fun, wasn't it? Copium Den was fun. There was a whole period where Brexit was happening around about that time when we were kind of. Those are the ones that stand out to me anyway. So anyway, people should tell me what their favorite era was. I think that would be quite better. Probably like, what's your favorite memory of UO? That would probably get you a better thing, because it's very hard to, it's hard for me to remember often in the moment. I really have to have things jog my memory. What was the show where Froggy actually had the poison pomegranate juice? I mean, when did that happen? That sticks out in my mind. Sir Zog says, "Making AA laugh is quite a satisfying accomplishment. Cheers to UAA, and thank you for curing me of libertarianism." See, I bet you there's people who exist in the chat who became libertarians because of me in the first place, who I then subsequently cured. Wonder if there's anybody in that boat who became a libertarian because of me and then left libertarianism because of me. There must be that person as well. Yeah, I'm glad to. I mean, trouble with libertarianism is it just can't, you know. I was never a leftist. That is a lie. I have never been a leftist. I was never a leftist. Never a leftist. Big Nig 420 says, what is your favorite term for the thing of ours? DR, sensible centrists, sensitive young men. I like sensible centrists because of all the reasons I've outlined already. I also think that increasingly it's true that we are sensible centrists. Like, look at the current conflict, for example, where we have stubbornly and steadfastly not taken a side. Hasn't that been fun? The sensible center. What do you mean, where has Cigar Stream gone? Cigar Stream's still up. Yeah, I have no notification that Cigar Stream is gone. It's there. It's still there from a couple of days ago. Clear the Mount says, of the Prophets of Doom, which would you choose to have in a bar fight on your side and why? Assume they are at their WWYD equivalent peak. I'm pretty sure I've answered this before. Obviously, Glub. He was a fucking soldier. He was a military general. He, trained killer. Obviously, Glub. I mean, there's just no question. And then after that, of the other Prophets of Doom, probably Sorokin, because Sorokin... I mean, Sorokin, when he was exiled by the Bolsheviks when Lenin took over, because he was part of the provisional Russian government, and he survived for like 2 months in the Russian winter, minus 40. I still don't know how he survived, like living off berries and, you know, bits of food that he could find and stuff like that. That's a fucking hard bastard. So has to be that. Yeah, Glub and then Sorokin, I would say. MF Corp says, the other day on your tier list, you mentioned Michael Raphael Johnson. I recommend looking into his work. He's very knowledgeable on Russia and more. Yeah, he sounded very knowledgeable on the streams that I heard him on. Austin Diver says, since most of our world continues to be controlled by banking interests, does this tend to align with the Age of Winter theory? Well, there still needs... Yes, it does. But there still needs to be the takeover of the Great Unwashed to fulfill the Kali Yuga. So there's a further... There's a further kind of downward spiral to go. But yeah, it does... Having the materialist money interest is absolutely a winter thing. And in fact, Brooks Adams starts his book, The Law of Civilization and Decay, with Rome totally overrun by moneyed interests and debt slavery, essentially. So, yeah. Pinhead Luke says, what cigar did you smoke earlier and how was it? I smoked an Upman. It was an Upman Connoisseur 1. And it was very nice. It was very nice. And but the storm started raining, so I had to finish it a little prematurely, unfortunately. There was a little bit, I didn't quite get down to the last bits of the nub. I left most of the final third I had to leave because it started raining very heavily. And it was time to come and do the show anyway. So, yeah, I've got my regular rotation, now down. You know, I've got all my regulars. I've managed to secure boxes of each of my regulars, which are the Upmann. I mean, my favorite Upmann is the Connoisseur A, but they're too expensive. So as a kind of something, as a go-to, I've got the Upmann Connoisseur 1. I've got Juan Lopez Seleccione number 2, Jaffa Cake. I've got the Ramon Olones specially selected, cracking cigar. I've got the Partagas Aristocrats, good little daily smoke. I've got the Monte Cristo number 4s, another good little, you know, cheeky one. 40 minutes, 50 minutes, you know, Petit Corona. I've got the Partagas Serie D, of course. Good late, good nighttime cigar. Yeah, I mean, that's a good number. I've got the Dorset, what are they called? K Dorsey, number 50. Great smoke. I've got some Hoyo Especiale number 1. It's another good one. Bit more chocolatey than the classic number 2, but it's a good one. So I've got a pretty good selection at the moment. Nice kind of set of classics. let's carry on. Nathan CJ Hood says, what's the best Dylan album? For me, it's Blood on the Tracks. Yeah, Nathan Hood, it's Love and Theft. I think Love and Theft is the artist Dylan always wanted to be. I think it's got incredible songs. It's very cohesive. I think it's the sound he's always wanted. He is kind of, he's got a really amazing elliptical songwriting process on there. So for me, it's Love and Theft. Yeah, Blood on the Tracks. For a long time, I couldn't listen to that, having been through a divorce, of course. But I like lots of the Dylan. I like Street Legal. I like Bringing It All Back Home as well. In fact, I prefer Bringing It All Back Home to Highway 61 and Blonde on Blonde, which is controversial. So, you know, I like Oh Mercy as well. Oh Mercy is a good album. But so, yeah, Love and Theft is my pick ultimately. Nathan CJ Hood says, is Time Bee optimistic compared to the other Prophets of Doom? I think Time Bee is more optimistic in a sense, because he sees the birth of the new new universal religion coming out of the chrysalis is a kind of great hope for the future. Although I would say, and you won't like this answer, Nathan Hood, I think Time Bee is compromised by his Christianity. And when I say compromised, I think his faith prevents him from going and following his natural conclusions, because he ends up, I think, twisting his thesis to fit his faith. And obviously the other Prophets of Doom don't have that issue. Sorokin does as well. Sorokin's also a Christian. And he also ends up kind of contorting himself, because obviously being Christians, Christianity has to end up being the answer. But in a cyclical history, like, why wouldn't Christianity go the same way as all the other ones? So for me, I felt as a non-Christian that Time Bee ends up making some pretty unconvincing arguments towards the end of the 12 volumes. Because basically he has to save Christianity. And Sorokin does the same. Yes, they both have to save Christianity. Whereas obviously the others don't care about that, because they're not trying to save Christianity. So yeah, that would be my honest answer. Although you, as a Christian, may think otherwise. EC90 says, Do you think Ed Dutton is right, that all human civilization will just collapse like in the Bronze Age? I believe it will I believe it more every day. I just don't see who will, for example, refine petroleum after the day of the pillow. I'm not sure about that. I feel like it won't just be a complete reversion to Bronze Age, because none of the other previous collapses completely destroyed all technology. They still had vestiges of what was there before. It may be the bigger and more complex structures that people struggle to keep going, right? So I'm thinking like the running of a modern day airport, for example. That's a lot of logistics and a lot of complexity. Stuff like that is what I'd imagine may go first. Monato Ultra says, which thinker has influenced your own thoughts in the last 5 years? For me, it is Evola. Your Evola streams were very good. Evola has been very influential on my thinking. But I would say that... Mosca of the elite theorists, and Parade, in fact, all of the elite theorists have been pretty influential on my thinking. Burnham, very influential on my thinking. It'd be between them. It'd be one of the elite theorists, or either Mosca, Pareto, or Evola, I would say. And it's a struggle, of course, because Burnham and Pareto, in particular, are diametrically opposed to Evola in many respects. I mean, Evola shares their elitist assumptions, but remember, Burnham's entire project is to strip politics of all metaphysics. And Evola's entire project is to do the opposite, is to bring back metaphysics. So this is there's a tension between those two things. I veer on the side, as everybody knows, of the BS, 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 therefore I rule. But Evola wants you to believe in the BS, wherever that BS is. Right, so that's for you to figure that out. I mean, I've said I can't really go there. I'm too cynical, basically. I'm not gonna do the nose exercises in the yoga of power. I'm just not gonna do it. You might, though. Dylan 98 says, I started watching you after the debate with Sargon and Bantu against the socialists in 2017. It's interesting to see how far you've come. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot, there's been a lot to take in, hasn't there? A lot to take in. All I can remember about that debate is I was talking about corn a lot. A lot of people watched that debate. You know, there were I can't remember how many thousands of people watching that live. But the chat was just, all I remember was hundreds and hundreds of people posting corn on the cob icon, just lots and lots of corn. And every time I spoke, all I could see was just corn whizzing past. That's my main memory of that debate. Marcos 588 says, no denying the two Renaissance period. A took the Evola Carlyle pill. D locked in as a co-host. Carlyle, Turnip, Prude, and Aaron grew bigly. A.M., Columba, and Furious joined the scene. The heavyweight era. Yeah, when was that period? When was that period that I suppose that was a good... The thing is that you have to remember that Charlie and Aaron and the NRX boys and so on, they tended to go on Cigar Stream more. I always think of Charlie as a Cigar Stream. He was almost like the kind of co-host of Cigar Stream for a while. And Turnip came on Cigar Stream a lot as well. So I always think of some of those guys as being more on Cigar Stream than on UO in my memory. I mean, Charlie's had a good number of appearances on UO as well. EC90 says, watching Clarkson, I gather that basically no farmers make any profit. What do you think of what do you think incentivizes them to rear and grow food now? Just subsidies? Yeah, I think a lot of it is subsidies and government contracts and things like that. I mean, a lot of them are just in it for the love of, not for the, like, they've inherited a farm or they're trying to keep a family tradition going, you know. It's difficult to be a farmer, though. It really is. It's hard. George Adams says, preferred tag team combo, powerhouse and technical, two powerhouses, two technical, two young high flyers, master and student, or ether. Now, that is a very interesting question. Powerhouse and technical, that's kind of like Hercules and Paul Roma. Was it Power and Glory? Do you remember them? Two powerhouses, that's like Rogue Warriors, Powers of Pain. Two technical, powerhouse and technical is also Hart Foundation, Jim Neidhart and Bret Hart, of course. Two young high flyers is the Rockers, Rock and Roll Express. Two technical, that's Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard, right? Arn and Tully. Master and Student, Mr. Resting 2 and Magnum TA. Bruno Sammartino and Larry Zbysko before the heel turn. Master and Student. That period where Ric Flair was tagging with Batista. I mean, you also get the odd giant plus, like, do you remember Andre and DiBiase tag for a period there? And I like, I mean, to be honest, if naming all those teams, I like the brain, but I like the two technical. That's probably my, you know, Arn and Tully, Brainbusters would be my tag team combo. I think Arn Anderson and Bobby Eaton later on in WCW. That was a cool team. Funk Brothers, great tag team. Choshu and Yatsu in AC's Japanese stuff, brilliant team. So two technical would be my pick. Cringe Walker says, if you could reform Christianity to correct its current course, what would you reform? I would take away the textuality part. As I've said before, I would take away the focus on interpreting the Bible, because to me, that's where all the problems start. I would try to make it more mystical. I would try to take it away from the text. I would try to institute a more, I would kind of try to depersonalize it a bit more. That's what I would do. But, you know, I will never be in any sort of position where I could do that. So don't worry, Christians. Inedible Red says, best pizza topping. I'm a double pepperoni guy. Double pepperoni. Double mozzarella, double pepperoni. For me, the best pizza... I grew up in the era of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And I always remember there was an advert. I think it was for like the original Nintendo Turtles game. But they had the actual turtles there eating pizza, playing the Nintendo game. And I always remember in that advert, they pick up the pizza and the mozzarella would kind of, you know, they pick it up and you'd see the melty, you know, drag out of the cheese, you know. And for me, a good pizza needs to have that. And I think a lot of the modern ones now, like if you go to like any of these scummy pizza places like Domino's or whatever, they don't really have that. they seem to make it where the cheese doesn't run. So that's what I would always look for in a good pizza, is the runniness of the cheese. I also like, I don't mind a salty pizza where it's like, you know, anchovies and capers or something like that, where you've got that kind of salt factor. That's not bad. I also very often go for a four cheese because I love cheese, and I like Gorgonzola on the, I like the Gorgonzola quarter of the four cheese. So I tend to go with one of those, but I've also been known to go for the, in Pizza Express, they've got a chicken one, not a chicken barbecue one, a different chicken one. So occasionally I might go for a chicken one as well. Why is AA Rimmer? Why is it Rimmery to want the cheese pole or to go for the Quattro Formaggio? Why is that Rimmery? I'm not very Rimmery, actually. Rimmer is very anal and very kind of annoying. So I would get on much better with Lister than I'd get on with Rimmer, without doubt. Rimmer would drive me up the wall. They do not deliver to the lodge. What are the rules? Right, so that is it for the super chats for the time being, unless anybody sends any more. So now I can start like, oh no, there's been a couple more. Oh, there's been a few more, sorry. Taka says, I was very surprised that the most religious group in Israel is exempt from military service. Seems highly exceptional among the countries and ever resentment-inducing, regardless of the recent conflict. Are there any other examples of this? I mean, from what I understand, the religious Israelis are like a client group of Netanyahu's, and he gives them gibs, basically. You know, you in politics, in democracy, you reward your friends, right? And that's what Netanyahu's doing. He rewards his friends. You know, you never make your friends fight in the war. You'd make you make everybody else do it. Taka says, every once in a while we get a glimpse into some scandal involving stashing away big wealth in tiny islands nobody has heard of in the middle of the ocean. What do you think is the significance of these tiny islands in geopolitics? I think they exist outside of the normal framework of the rules exactly for that purpose. So there we go. Holocron Record says, AA, do you have any fiction recommendations, preferably ones with audiobooks? No. Takar says, it seems that the only leaders who are truly incentivized to care about the native majority population fertility rates are those of ethnostates or very small minorities like the Boer, no head of a multi-ethnic state is incentivized to care. Yes, you're right about that. You're right about that. And he also says, why do you think the Bolsheviks never made the USSR overrun with immigration? Well, the USSR was massive, don't forget. It wasn't just Russia. It was, what do they call them? The self-administrative republics or whatever they were called. I mean, that's what the USSR stands for. It was like a self-administrative zone. So the USSR was already a multi-ethnic empire with many different ethnicities within it. What they didn't do, immigration, what they did do was a lot of highly disruptive moving around of populations. They did a shitload of that. They moved like these people need to move like 2,000 miles away over here. And, you know, they did a lot of that sort of stuff. So it was pretty disruptive. Within the USSR, oblasts, SSRs, that's Wiggles. That's what I was thinking of. SSRs. No, they were called SSRs. Okay, let's carry on. Couple more little super chats down here, and then I'll have a look at the normal chat. White Talk says, I said Monday the populist delusion was used as a textbook because the university student was shilling it to me from a course he took here in Canada. Wow. Well, there we go. Somebody in a Canadian university is teaching from the populist delusion. Well, what do you know? It's not bad, is it? I mean, I think a lot of my books are still used in university courses. You know, I'm an academic. I write academic books. I just kind of figured out, well, my current situation is that as long as I can do this, I don't have to be at a university or I don't have to teach. Thank God. Yeah, not surprised. I'm not that surprised that it's being used by someone because nobody's written a book like that in recent years. EC90 says, Christianity ultimately comes down to confessing that you are completely evil and helpless. Few people are going to do that, especially high IQ ones. Okay, well, that's for other people to decide. JF says, AA, yesterday I had a chat with a British guy, and he had the nerve to claim that the UK and his countrymen sucked, but London was one of the best cities in the world because of its diversity. Lol. Well, I mean, you know, it's just no help in. Okay. Let's have a look. Not that JF. Okay, so let me have a look in chat. How much can you pull, AA? Well, I'm married, so what are you talking about? Talking about weight. They do it in kilos, don't they? I don't know. I don't have the big dumb. I've got the little barbells. I don't have the big, what's it called? The dumbbell. I don't have one of those. So there we go. Frozen says, can you recommend a cigar humidor? Oh, the little one is the dumbbell and the big one is the barbell. There we go. So there we go. Yeah, I mean, listen, I don't give a shit. I'm a 41-year-old man who's, you know, grumpily married with a kid. So you can do what you want. I've always been pretty strong though. So, you know, with a bit of working out, I can pull some weights, you know, if I want to. Brulham says, have you read Foundations by René Wormster? It would complement your reading of Intel agencies' involvement with art, NGOs very well. Good one. Okay. Funny name, though. René Wormster. René Wormster. I'm 5'8", living in the ashes. 5'8". So, but I'm strong. I've always been strong. I've got natural strength. So if I worked out, I reckon I could, you know, within a few months, so, you know, you could get up there without doubt. Yeah. And I got good leg strength and I've got good upper body strength. Always have done. So there we go. But I am not motivated to go to the gym. I've always hated going to the gym. It's fucking boring. Really find it dull. I've always hated the gym. It's just fucking boring. Can't stand it. It's just not my scene. Never has done. It's dull. The best ever period I went I mentioned it the other day. There was a whole period where I spent about, it was in the run-up to getting to my wedding, whenever that was. 2018, when did I get married? Second time. In the run-up to that wedding, I spent quite a lot of time going to the gym. And I managed to kind of occupy myself by watching all of like Black Pill's old videos. Because they were kind of a good length. Like most of his old videos were like 35 minutes, 40 minutes or whatever. You know, that was quite good. You could be like, oh, I'll do 20 minutes on the treadmill and then I'll do some weights or whatever. And, you know, by the time you were done with it, you'd get through a Black Pill video or whatever. That was the last time I would say that I got into a decent routine. And then do you remember I was going to those Blaze sessions, you know, which was that was like mixed intensity training. I did that for a few months as well, which was fucking knackering, I tell you. But it's just never been my scene. I just can't fucking be bothered, to be honest. Just don't care. Fuck off, the lot of you. All right, what else? I don't know, I just hate the whole scene of gyms. And I do have my punch bag here. And recently I've been, that dude from the Lotus Eaters, what's his name? Jonathan. Good guy. You know, he does a lot of Carl's tech stuff. He sent me a few routines that you can do like at home on the punch bag. And I've been doing that a little bit recently. That's fun. At least that's fun. You know, it's knackering, but you can do like 15 minutes, 20 minutes on there. And, you know, at least you're punching a bag. That's kind of, you can get some aggression out or whatever. So I find the punch bag is fun. And I got that punch bag because when I was doing the Blaze stuff, that was the fun bit. The punch bag was fun. And the other parts of it were drilling. I didn't like the other parts. The worst part of doing Blaze was the fucking women who were there. The women were amazing. Like, they were machines, some of those girls. So that was kind of emasculating. I was like, oh shit, I'm dying here. And this, you know, there was one, I can't remember, she was like Japanese girl or Chinese girl, but she was like, and what they did at the Blaze, they'd have like the monitor where it would have your heart rate and would have like how many calories they'd done. And it'd be like, holy shit, this girl's on like 2000 calories in this time. Like, what the fuck is she, you know, barely breaking a sweat. So that was, you know, that was good, I suppose. All right. Yeah. But I hate cardio. I hate going to the gym. It's just never been my scene. The way I used to keep fit was sport because it was fun. You could play football, you could play, you know, tennis. And obviously it's impossible to get a game of football together. And, you know, when you actually join a club, it's too serious then. Like I was saying before, actually playing games and like competitively, that is a whole rigmarole. And it's a lot of time that you have to spend doing that. And, you know, you just, where do you find the time? Especially now that, you know, you've married with kids and so on. It's very difficult, you know. So, all right. Shall we get out of here? Is there any more? Oh yeah, can you recommend a cigar humidor? Let me tell you that I've got four of them. Tell you what they are now. Let's have a look at the names of my humidors. I'll tell you what the best one is of them. Yeah, the Volenx cigar humidor for 50 cigars, grab it on Amazon, 40 quid. You get a couple of those Bavida 65% bags, right? Get two of those Bavida 65% control packs, right? Get two of them, stick it in the box. You could take 50 cigars in there. I've got two of those Volnex cigar humidors. And you also want the little digital hydrometer. There's a good one you can get called Inkbird. It's only like a tenner. Inkbird digital hydrometer, because you want to check, you want to know the little hydrometers that come with the humidors are crap. So you want an independent one, because it will be more accurate. So yeah, stick that in there as well, and that will tell you if it's proper or not. And you want it about 65. A lot of people say 69. It's actually better to have it a little bit lower in humidity, I find. Do you think Britain has any hope? No, I don't. No, absolutely buggered. Smoking a cigar is the same as vaping. No, it's not. Don't be stupid. Do you dry box? That's something a lot of like the kind of pros talk about. I've never found the need to dry box. I found that if you store them at 65 or just below 65, you never really need to do that dry boxing business. Okay. Marcos 588 says, in recent times, AA, Semi, and Prude Nethers would occasionally host a roundtable chat. I would love to see more of them with our favorites. Cheers, AA. I'm going on a stream with Semiagog and Apostolic Majesty next week on the British Empire. We're going to talk about the British Empire and its legacy. So it's going to be kind of a chat, I guess. EC90 says, no bread, pasta. I lost a stone in half a year. Yeah, I get that, and I've done it before, but I just can't stand it. I just like eating, so fuck all that. I can't stand it. Sean Max says, any deepest lore of the carny history of pro wrestling? What do you want me to go into it right now? There's a good book by Tim Hornbaker that goes into all of that. He's a decent writer of pro wrestling, so yeah. Yeah, but guys, you've got to understand, I don't give a shit. I'm married already. Right? Fuck off. If you're 20 something and you're chasing tail, knock yourself out, go to the gym every day. But I'm at a different point in my life, and I just don't give a shit. So, what are your top three favorite USA presidents? I like the one who died in office. What was his name? He was famous for having the affair, the scandal. What was the name of that? What was the name of that president? Coolidge, was it? Calvin Coolidge? I like him, because he died and didn't do anything and spent all his time womanizing. Calvin Coolidge is the best president, because he didn't annoy, like, he was bad. He just didn't do anything. So he's probably better than all the other presidents due to his lack of interference, I would suggest. I don't have any other. I don't have. Do you know being overweight makes you more likely to have every disease? Yes, so what? everybody has to die, EC90, right? Everybody has to have the final release of death, and I'm not scared of death, so fuck off. I just don't care. Whatever, dude. I mean, you know, did you know that driving a car can also make you more likely to die in a car accident? I mean, so fucking what? It doesn't matter. I just don't, like, who cares? It'd be a benefit, wouldn't it? It'd be a benefit to not have to live on this earth anymore. I don't care. So you can go on about it as much as you want. I just don't give a shit. You can do what you want, and I can do what I want. How about that? You know, whatever. What else? All right. Any other questions? Warren G. Harding. Warren G. Harding, he was a good president, was he? I mean, I think it's Calvin Coolidge. Calvin Coolidge. Have you played Under Rail? I don't think I have. Let me have a look at that. Maybe I have played Under Rail at some point, where though it looks familiar. No, I'm confusing it with another game. No, I haven't played Under Rail. I haven't played it. It looks like another. It looks really familiar to another game, though. But that game was a lot more blue than this one. Okay, there we are. Notarik says, "How should a person ask a question to get the purest answer? In the interest of avoiding a question that has too many branches or is too open to leave the question befuddled, how to avoid leading questions with predictable answers?" Well, one of the things I remember, one of the things I remember was, when I was dealing with the barrister, when all that stuff was happening with my old job, he wrote lots and lots and lots and lots of yes, no questions, which were designed in such a way that you could not answer them without saying yes or no. Right, because they're literally closed questions. And he did that. And the reason he did that is because he knew that that whole process would have to be like documented. And if they didn't answer the question yes or no, they have to weasel and waffle. So that's a pretty good method. That's the best method I've seen use of questions in my lifetime, was the way he expertly did all those yes or no questions. It was forensic. It was amazing. So I think. All right. Do you consider yourself a prophet of doom? No, not really. I don't think so. I don't think I'm a prophet of doom. I consider myself somebody who has written a kind of a document of the prophets of doom, without necessarily being a prophet myself. Shawnee Mac says, "AA, do you dislike Kenneth Branagh?" Yes. Yeah, I do. I think he's a twat. What's your favorite season of Blackadder? It's between two and four. Probably two. Ask me on a different day, I might say four, but it's obviously between those two. It's two. Then again, is Percy in two? No, it's two. Two is the best one. Two. What's your favourite series of Red Dwarf?
I like the very first season where it's very kind of like waiting for Godot, Beckett, kind of, it's much more kind of existential in season one, right? So I like season one. And I like the season where they're on the little bug and they do like the time travel. What season is that? Season four, is it, when they're on the star bug thing? And they have the, like the adventure where they meet their doubles and Dwayne Dibley and all of that. I think it's four. So one and four would be my picks for Red Dwarf. Yeah. Would the end of Israel mark the end of Boomer Truth? Well, if the spell of the mid-century Germans and so on was broken, that would be the end of Boomer Truth. But I would say probably not, because the whole battle is playing out as two competing versions of Boomer Truth, essentially. So, can you read the Goodreads description of Foundations of Wormstar by give your opinion? Okay. Who is your favourite English footballer? Paul Parker. AA, have you ever shared your favourite WWF Championship match? My favourite WWF... I kind of like... I kind of like... Was it Cena versus Brock Lesnar? There was a really epic Brock Lesnar match. I think it was with John Cena in like about 10 years ago or something like that. That was an epic match. I hate the modern epic style. I'm not a big Shawn Michaels fan, so none of them matches. I didn't like any of the kind of false finish fests of WrestleMania and all of that. I like... There's a couple of really good Bob Backlund versus Greg Valentine matches from early 80s. But... And there's a couple of really gritty kind of Hulk Hogan ones against Paul Orndorff, and a couple of Harley Race matches in the 80s are pretty good as well. But top of my head, that Brock Lesnar one. People will have to draw. Was it Roman Reigns, actually? Was it Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar? I can't remember, but there was one that was really good from about 7 or 8 years ago. Did you like the Big Boss Man? Yeah, he was great. Yeah, Boss Man was good. There's a really good, if you want to watch some prime Boss Man stuff, have a look to see if somebody's put together the Bobby Heenan versus Big Boss Man feud when Rick Rude and Bobby Heenan come out and every interview they give, they're laying into Boss Man's mother. And he keeps on getting more and more angry. Like, if you say anything about my mother again, and they just ramp it up every week. Heenan's like, yeah, you know, like basically calling his mother trash and a whore and all of that. It's an amazing feud, that. And they end up, there's one episode of Superstars or Challenge or whatever, where Heenan is handcuffed to the side of the ring for the entire show. And all of the matches come and go, and he's begging and pleading with all the people, you know, help me out of here. And then, you know, the interaction, like the baby faces come and the interactions that he has, that is an amazing storyline involving Boss Man. My favorite Ric Flair era. Yeah, mid 80s. I like his 91-92 WF run. It's got some amazing stuff, but it's clearly 85-87 Horseman era is the best era, peak Flair. Favorite surprise WWF comeback? Backlund in 93 was so out of place. There has to be that. Has to be like Backlund at WrestleMania 9 coming out like completely out of place, you know, just nonsensical comeback. And then he actually won the title a couple of years later. So, right. What position do you prefer to play in football? I told you earlier on, so I was a defender, centre back, right back. Foundations, their power and influence. By Rene Wormster. I'm on Goodreads now, picking it up. A searching analysis of America's most powerful tax-exempt foundations, their actions as opposed to their stated purpose. Okay, it sounds good. I will check that out when I get the time. Yes, George, you're right. Rood is suspended by President Jack Tunney in the storyline, and he's actually like fired from, like, in the kayfabe. Jack Tunney suspends Rude. And so, and then he rules that Heenan has to finish all of Rude's dates himself. So it leads to Bossman versus Heenan matches. Yeah. Rank the three Palpatine apprentices. Well, clearly his best apprentice was Dooku, wasn't it? Let's be honest. Vader was a disappointment. I honestly think Vader was a downgrade on Dooku. Clearly Dooku was the best apprentice. Then Vader. Then Maul. Thoughts on Razor Ramon? A little bit overrated. Very good character work, but a little bit overrated. In modern fans' eyes, I would say he's a little bit overrated. Thoughts on Scott Adams? More base than you'd imagine, but still a boomer at the end of the day. Just a boomer. Some of his persuasion stuff is quite good. What's your favourite historical time period? Kind of like the Victorian era, to be honest. I like the kind of period around like 1910, kind of Edwardian, late Victorian Edwardian type kind of time. Yeah. I also like the Elizabethan era. I like the medieval era as well. But probably if I had to pick that. My $5 super chat was skipped. Was it? Shark Arkhart says, I had to rush to get here and ask you this. Can you please research Kazaria? It's hot right now. Okay. Yeah, why not? I will have a look into it. Is that the Kazar question? I will have a look into that because it keeps on coming up in the books I'm reading, so I'm kind of interested. Does multiculturalism give us an advantage if war with Iran and allies versus Israel and allies happen? Tactical nukes were used. I don't see why it would factor in at all. If it comes down to using tactical nukes, I mean, what difference does it make? Grumpy AA. Not that grumpy, am I? If World War III breaks out, will you stay in England? I mean, you're acting like you'd have a choice. You wouldn't have a choice. You wouldn't be able to leave. There'd be no flights. Probably be forced to serve in some capacity, you know. The Achaemenid Empire or the Parthian Empire, which one is better? Achaemenian. Any plans to appear on BAP show? No. I mean, you'd have to ask me, but I don't think he's going to. So, Ronald McNugget says, "I love your content, mate. Keep up the good work." Well, thank you very much, Ronald McNugget. It means so much. All right, shall we get out of here? It's been 2 hours. Let's wrap up. I'll have a look very quickly to see if there's been any on Twitter that have written in. It's been one or two. The English Idiot says, "You say nobody watching this would be able to put up with this, but I think everybody watching would put up with it. Look at what we're living through now. We all live in cages. The only thing that differs is the gilding on the outside of the cages." Yeah, that's true. That is true. That's true, I suppose. All right. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Was The Undertaker overrated? No, he was. The Undertaker was superb at what he did. He was a special attraction. He took a character that could have easily failed and made it one of the all-time best, of course. All right. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Do buy my courses. Join the channel. Pick up a mug. Subscribe to the Substack. But most importantly of all, get out.
What goes on in this town is none of your business.
As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Well, that's...